buddy Bill Buckmaster with you. Tom Fairbanks, my buddy's on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing this winter solstice show. It is December the 21st, 2023. Tom, I like winter solstice because, I mean, I like the cool temperatures of winter, but not that big on a lot of darkness. And few seconds by seconds, every day forward, we'll be moving toward spring and new growth and new birth and all that stuff.
Well, in Alaska, we always marked December 21st as one of our highlight days on the calendar because that meant we had turned the corner and every day was going to start getting a little longer and we're going to start getting more and more sunshine.
Yeah. There are areas in Alaska, I believe, in the northern area, I believe the community is Barrow, Alaska.
Yeah, it's above the Arctic Circle.
They are in darkness until 21 January, something like that, third week of January.
Yeah, then the days start looking like twilight.
Wow.
With the sun, you know it's below the horizon. It's out there.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, bing, you start seeing it.
Yeah, it kind of had the opposite effect when I was in Iceland a few years ago. And it was like we were in May, and at the days there, there's very little, very little night. And it's a different feeling completely. Steve Christie, the District 4 Republican, is on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Supervisor Christie is the lone Republican on the 5-member board. Supervisor Christie, how are you? How's your holiday season so far?
Oh, it's going wonderfully, and Merry Christmas to you and yours, Bill.
Thank you very much. Sylvia Lee will be representing District 3. She's now one of your colleagues on the Pima County Board of Supervisors. She will serve through the end of 2024. Now, the board voted 3-1 on Tuesday to appoint Ms. Lee to the seat left vacant by Pima County Supervisor Sharon Bronson, of course, longtime Democrat who represented the district for many, many years. What was your feeling about Sylvia Lee being on the board, Steve Christie?
Well, it was interesting that my colleagues finally arrived at that decision. She has a very in-depth set of qualifications and experiences that she brings with her. She's also, in addition to being a new colleague, she's a hallmate, office mate, basically on 33 North Stone on the 11th floor. She's just next door to us. So she stopped by yesterday and it was Tuesday we welcomed her and we're looking forward to establishing some great relationships with her. And we wish her the very best, and we'll do everything we can to make her arrival on the board as seamless as possible.
Did you vote for her?
Well, it was 3-1. Who do you think the one was?
I think it was probably you.
I voted against her. I did vote against her.
Well, let's talk a little bit about it, Steve, Christie. Why did you vote against her? You kind of indicated that you felt she was qualified.
Well, she has a deep seated involvement in our community. She's served on the Pima Community College Board, but I think philosophically we have some deep differences. If it was a regular election for that seat and I was in her district, I would not vote for her then. And I feel that same kind of mentality when I'm on the board applies. So why would I vote for someone for the board when I'm on the board when I wouldn't vote for that person if I was a constituent or a possible constituent, even though she's very much involved in numerous community endeavors? I think philosophically, and I think this is self-evident by the fact that she was nominated by my colleagues, who, as it's well known, we disagree on many, many issues politically and philosophically as well, that she would not be in line with my beliefs, and I don't think I'm in line with hers. But I also feel that I wasn't I wasn't put on the board to vote for Democrats. And certainly this is a Democrat Party choice. She is replacing Sharon Bronson, who is a Democrat, and by statute, she must be a Democrat to fill the vacancy. And consequently, I thought the best course of action was to let the Democrats sort all this out. I think there were two to three nominations over and above Ms. Lee, Dr. Lee, prior with candidates. So I thought it was their job to find the right one, and they did, but that doesn't necessarily mean I have to vote for someone that I don't think meets or aligns with my political beliefs or philosophy.
Were there any of the other candidates that would have tempted you to vote in the positive, or you just could not have voted? You just couldn't vote for a Democrat.
Well, as a matter of fact, I was very supportive of Edgar Soto. I became aware of Edgar when I was attending a Vail Chamber of Commerce meeting. He gave a terrific presentation of what he does on the Pima Community Campus East Side Center and his involvement in the community, plus his sports and tourism involvement. I was hoping that one of my colleagues would nominate him so I could second him. And that individual, Edgar Soto, I would have voted for. I thought he was he didn't carry a lot of political background or any kind of philosophical agenda, and that he would have made a terrific replacement for Supervisor Bronson. And I was sorry that he didn't even seem to get a second look by my colleagues.
Who I feel, excuse me, Steve, go ahead.
I feel it's their responsibility to find a Democrat replacement.
Yeah. So, how do you feel about working with Sylvia Lee? You're not going to have any issues there.
I don't think so. She was most pleasant and gracious when she stopped by our office, as well as she was after the vote. She came up to the podium and shook my hand, knowing obviously full well I did not vote for her, but she couldn't have been nicer and more courteous. So I think as someone who she and I probably share disparate political agendas and philosophies, nonetheless, she seems like someone that will be good and collaborative enough and workable enough where I'm looking forward to having the opportunity to see what kind of things we can draw together that we might have in common.
Let's switch the topic to the migrant situation. There are over 1,500 a day at last count, migrants coming through Tucson. And Ms. Lesher, Jan Lesher, was on our show, that was a week ago Friday, for our Friday Focus interview. And she was saying about there really no general fund money has been used in this regard concerning the migrants, but it is very much dependent, as you know, Steve Christie, on Uncle Sam reimbursing Pima County.
Well, then it doesn't matter if the taxes come from Uncle Sam or from our general fund. They're still our money. It's still our money that's being utilized in the either form of federal grants or the general fund. We keep hearing from those that seem to be proponents of open borders and for allowing this huge influx of migrants, always saying that this is a federal problem and that the federal government must step in and correct it. When in reality, the moment Pima County started taking federal money, it became Pima County's problem. And when Pima County started accepting that money, they accepted the strings and ties that go along with the federal money as far as setting up welcoming centers and supplying food and clothing and shelter and medication and transportation and everything else that goes with the immigration issues at taxpayer expense. And now all of a sudden we're faced with this enormous inundation of not only what were considered, and I think, you know, it's a questionable issue as well about asylum seekers, but now flat out illegal immigrants coming across our border in record numbers. And now all of a sudden we have a problem in Pima County. If we had never started this to begin with, if we had refused the money to begin with, If we had never converted the Casa Salinas Welcoming Center overnight to accept migrants and to accept federal funds, we wouldn't be facing this catastrophe we're facing right now. And now on top of that, we have street releases that are inevitable if they aren't already taking place. And if we feel like we have a homeless problem in Pima County now, we're going to be accepting homeless people from all over the world in droves, and the problem will be multiplied tenfold than what we're experiencing now. So now the issue is that even as wrong as it is, in my view, to take federal money, we're going hat in hand to Washington. Chair Grijalva went just last week or the week before asking money. Governor Hobbs is asking for money. Money is running out. There's no money in the accounts now to cover from the government side to cover what we're expending and the expenditures that we're having at the Drexel Road complex and also at the Casa Salinas Center and other migrant shelters. So when that runs out, the only other thing, if they want to keep taking illegal immigrants coming into the country, into Pima County, they're going to have to dip into the general tax fund, the general fund, which is going to put some severe hardships on other services that we should be delivering in Pima County. This is a really grave problem. And the only way I see out of it is to tell the federal government we will not accept any more street releases or shelter releases in Pima County. We're going to shut our operations down. You figure it out, but don't give us any more money and make sure that the border is secured so these immigrants go somewhere else other than through Pima County if they come into our country at all.
Are you delighted that the governor is sending troops to the border?
Well, I don't know if they're going to be, Walmart greeters down there to welcome asylum seekers. No, if they have some sort of authority to stop the immigrants from entering our country, that's another thing. But I think there's some regulations as to what the National Guard can do as far as patrolling and as far as enforcement. If they're going to be there just to help the Border Patrol assimilate immigrants coming in and do the paperwork to welcome them in, it's really not helping matters. We need enforcement down there that can actually stop the flow of immigration illegally coming over our borders. And I don't think that the declaration by Governor Hobbs addresses that or is even going to have come anywhere near doing that.
All right, let's pause right here with Supervisor Steve Christie to talk about Christmas in Mona's, home of the Danish Kringle, Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Get ready for Christmas. How about a Kringle on Christmas morning? How about a Kringle this weekend? How about a Kringle right now? I tell you, I could use a piece of comfort food, and that's got Kringle is certainly meets that bill. Northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open for lunch right now. Their website is monasdanishbakery.com. Still time to go up there and ask about dessert for Christmas dinner. How about a pie? How about dinner rolls? And of course, in the morning, the Kringle, or maybe the Kringle on Boxing Day, which is the day after Christmas. So it's the Kringle season at Mona's Danish Bakery. Steve Christie, Pima County Supervisor, stays on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. It's the Buckmaster Show, Thursday edition. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan to the RTA board by December. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. A friend just sent me something from a friend over in Central California on the coast. Wow. Pouring rain. And I guess that's headed this way. So, yeah, we could be getting maybe up to an inch spread over like a 24-hour period, something like that. So what's the old saying? Batten down the hatches. Anyway, it's the Buckmaster Show, Thursday edition. Congressman Grijalva will be our Friday focus interview tomorrow on the program. Steve Christie, Pima County Supervisor, Republican, the lone Republican on the five-member board, is on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go to line two. Steve's on line one, but Jeff has called us on line two. He has a question for Supervisor Christie. Go ahead, Jeff.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas to both you gentlemen.
Thank you.
My question concerns a news report I saw the other night, a couple nights ago. Down on the border, below Aravaca, right on the border, a lady who has a ranch there, literally her fence is the border, she wasn't even complaining at this point. It's beyond that. Anyway, the border fence was there, but there were four holes there that she described them as being big enough to drive two semis through side by side, these four different holes in the border on her ranch perimeter. So anyway, this is Santa Cruz County, obviously, so it's thankfully this particular thing is not your problem, Mr. Chris. But in any case, this is a small fixable problem. I mean, there's all these massive problems to do with immigration, illegal immigration. Let me state that, illegal immigration. This is one where, okay, fix these four border holes, and at least the immigration has to come through, I don't know, Nogales and Mariposa Gate somewhere, as opposed to just coming across your ranch as if it were a freeway. Now, I'm going to guess that one or two of those illegal aliens might end up in Tucson, so eventually it will be Pima County's problem. Is there some reason why we can't do a simple, small thing like fix four gaping holes in the border fence and at least make illegals come through more or less a recognized channel or something like that? I know this is a vague general question, but it is fixable. It's a problem that can be fixed.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff, for calling. Let's hear from Supervisor Christie, his take on that.
Well, you know, you're talking about the fence in the private property Jeff just related and conveyed about the holes in the fence. They're actually, the reports I've seen as well, taking heavy equipment and breaking down the Trump wall, the regular border wall, and causing great big gaps with these steel girder beams. They're just bashing right through those, and people are just flying through those holes that are created on the other side, probably by the cartels, I'm sure by the cartels, destroying the existing, 30-foot border fencing and wall there, and putting in these holes with this heavy equipment. So it's not just isolated in small little pockets, like four or five holes in a pasture dividing fence. This goes all the way to the main border wall. And it just is indicative of the fact that our border patrol and our security forces along the border are undermanned, under stress, understaffed, and overstressed. And that's why we're seeing border closures like Lukeville. Whenever you go to California, you used to go through several checkpoints in Yuma and then closer to San Diego. Those checkpoints are not manned anymore. They let traffic go through because they've had to take assets and put them somewhere else. And the most overwhelming factor that our security along the border in the form of ICE and Border Patrol and other agencies is that they're tied down to processing this huge influx rather than trying to stop the illegal immigration happening in the first place. They're just overwhelmed with trying to be administrators pencil pushers and paper filers to try to have some semblance of organization of these thousands upon thousands of people that are just crushing the border. And for them to try to fix a couple of holes in somebody's ranch fence, much less repair the major holes that are being perpetrated by cartels with heavy equipment along other parts of the border, is just too much to expect the Border Patrol to do it. They're overwhelmed and they just can't keep up.
Let's see if we can work one more topic. And your colleagues are very excited about what's being called the Prosperity Initiative for Pima County. There was a 3-1 vote, and you did vote no on that. What don't you like about that initiative?
Several things. First, the main reason I voted no initially was because this, as you know by reading the initiative, is very comprehensive and covers practically every facet of the fabric of our lives in Pima County. Everything from housing to criminality to families to health care, the list goes on and on and on. And we did not have a full board to address that initiative, and I felt that was wrong, that 200,000 people in Supervisor Bronson's district were not represented and did not have a representative there to address this initiative. And to me, that's a very blatant form of disenfranchisement, because it's important that however that the person filling Supervisor Bronson's seat votes on that, at least there is some accountability. They can point to that person and say, well, you approved it or you didn't approve it, and be held accountable. When the seat was vacant, 200,000 people had nobody to hold anybody accountable to. I thought that was wrong. The second thing that was very disturbing, these were very pervasive plans and aggressive plans, if not monumental plans, as far as changing planning and zoning regulations to accommodate government housing and other numerous really socially implicated instances that had no price tag. There, you look at these, I think there were 13 bullet points that highlighted the initiative. You know that somewhere along the line, in no certain order and in no short time at all, there's going to be a big bill associated with these initiatives, these programs, these policies. What we dealt with at that 3-1 vote that you referred to, in no way, shape, or form even talked about the bill that's going to be coming, about the money that's going to be expended, about the taxpayers that are going to be taxed on these issues. And, you know, I don't want to date myself too blatantly, but I remember Lyndon Johnson's Great Society, and that was an abysmal failure. And this has all the makings of that, and matter of fact, replicates it in many ways. So I have a number of issues with the initiative, and I don't feel that it is a role of government to get involved in most, if not all, of these initiatives, and that the taxpayers are going to be footing the bill, and no one has said anything about what it's going to cost.
All right, Steve Christie, we'll talk to you early in the new year. In the meantime, I want to wish you and your family a very happy holiday, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and all of that.
Well, that's awful nice of you, Bill, and same to you, and Merry Christmas. And by the way, you mentioned about the weather coming. Mm-hmm. Word is that there's a potential for up to 16 inches of snow up on Mount Lemmon.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, so it'll be a winter wonderland up there, and wish you all the best and a Merry Christmas.
Thank you very much, Steve Christie. Yeah, the weather is moving in from west to east, as it usually does, from California. And so we'll be getting it soon. All right, University of Arizona agronomist Dr. Jeff Silvertooth is waiting in the wings. Lots to talk with him about as we take the mid-show break, Buckmaster, on the winter solstice edition. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
I've known the Chavez family for 35 years, and thanks to Chavez in 67, you won't find any soft, saggy cushions at the Buckmaster Bungalow. Chavez in 67 can restuff your cushions with new, firm, high-density foam. What a difference that makes. They also offer full upholstery services. Give them a call at 520-795-8032 or check out the website chavezsin67.com. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our live line for our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. I watered my new poinsettias from Green Things this morning, trying to stick with what they suggested, the every other day watering. They need a lot of water, the poinsettias. They are a tropical plant, but they are beautiful, I'll tell you. Trying to keep them looking good at the Buckmaster Bungalow to keep somewhat of a holiday spirit at the house. Green Things, 3384 East River Road, plenty of time still to get over there. Well, maybe not plenty of time because Christmas is like a few days away, but check it out. 13-acre site, everything you need for your holiday decorating, especially over at Zocalo Village, their sister business. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. Open daily in their 53rd year of business. Dr. Jeff Silvertooth is our contributor on agriculture, professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science at the University of Arizona Department of Environmental Science. Jeff didn't get off the bus yesterday. He served on the UA faculty and has worked statewide in ag since 1987. A native Oklahoman, Professor Silvertooth has been recognized as a fellow for both the American Society of Agronomy, ASA, and Soil Science Society of America. Hey, Jeff, happy birthday.
Hey, thank you, Bill.
You and I share same birth date.
We sure do.
And so that kind of makes us special in some ways, I guess. Anyway, I'll tell you, I was mentioning to you before the segment today, your industry, agriculture, Arizona and the United States, is under fire like no other time probably in modern history. People are saying hay producers in the Southwest, especially the Imperial Valley, they're being demonized. Media reports name and shame individual farm families. This is kind of frightening, isn't it?
Yeah, it's you know, a lot of histrionics going on around associated with the deal. And that's not unusual when somebody, you know, the segments of the American public are just now discovering the fact that it takes water to grow food. Yeah. And it comes as a shock to them as to what it takes. It takes natural resources to make, to produce everything we live by. And food, of course, is right central to that. So, yeah, there's a lot of, it's interesting. I think a lot of it's a function of the fact that we have most Americans that are 3 to 5 generations removed from the farm, from any kind of connection to rural America. And Arizona is a great example of that. 90% of our population, over 90%, is urban-based. And California, to our neighbor to the west, is 95%. It's a strong sense of urbanization that's been going on, particularly since World War II, but throughout the 20th century. And now we come to a time when we're limited on resources, water in the west. We have all this population in the west, and something has to give. And agriculture uses 70% of the water, fresh water, is diverted to agriculture in the state of Arizona, about 70% on the Colorado River. So it's logical that people would turn once they figure that out and say, oh, well, I have a simple solution to this problem. There it is right there. It's agriculture. But it's not that simple.
90% of the leafy green vegetables are consumed in the United States during the winter months are coming from the area I just mentioned. It's the Imperial Valley of California. And these are the families that are being shamed.
Yes, it's primarily Yuma, the Lower Colorado River Valley, mm-hmm. Yuma on the east side of the river in Arizona, and over in the Imperial Valley in the west. That's where this, like 95% of our leafy green vegetables from November to March every year, feeding the Americans and Canadians this leafy green vegetable industry, providing that to them, I should say. And yeah, that's where it's coming from. And people probably don't, most Arizonans don't know that.
No.
You know, it probably is not a reason that they should until now. And they recognize that that's where this water is being heavily utilized. And California and Imperial Valley takes a big target, Bill, because they have the largest, what we call, perfected senior water rights on the river. And they have 3.1 million acre feet is diverted and held by treaty, by contract and by law, to go into the Imperial Valley. California has 4.4 million acre feet on the Colorado River water allocations out of a budget of 16.5 million acre feet total. So you can see, you know, California represents about 25%, the largest share coming off the river, a little more than 25%.
The ProPublica article was criticizing these farmers, saying that the food, that the what they are growing, a lot of it goes to feed livestock for the production of hay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Alfalfa is the largest acreage crop in Arizona. It's one of the, it's the largest acreage crop, I believe, in the Imperial Valley right now. And the reason being is there's a strong market for that alfalfa hay. It's high quality. We can grow very high quality crops in the desert, alfalfa being one of them. And the reason there's a strong demand for the alfalfa to go feed animals is because there's a strong demand from people to consume the products from these animals. These animals are processing this alfalfa and turning it into...
Because if the animals don't eat...
You're right, you know. So yeah, it's, we're secondary consumers of alfalfa. And that's a great example of this disconnect I was referring to earlier. You know, you have to feed animals to have them produce. And we want meat. You know, we want meat products come from cattle. And you want dairy products come from dairy cattle. And a lot of this hay, alfalfa hay, is going to feed dairy cattle. It's no wonder we have these concentrations of high acreage alfalfa close to large metropolitan areas such as Southern California, Los Angeles. Central Arizona is a huge consumer because of the dairies that produce the milk and dairy products that, that support these populaces. You have to recognize, too, I guess we all do, that most fresh dairy products are transported within, are consumed within 300 miles of their point of origin. And so it's not surprising that we have dairies.
Yeah, you want fresh dairy products.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Yeah. So people have to think about that. If you want to get rid of alfalfa, then we're not going to feed the cattle. And it's going to, there's a domino effect there. And that's the difficult part of this from an education standpoint, Bill, is that people don't see these connections. If they're going to have to. We're going to have to. If you want to make intelligent decisions about it, we're going to have to. So that's where really some of the challenges lie, is in communication.
You know, we don't hear, though, about the vast amount of Colorado River water that is used to manufacture microchips right here in Arizona. Microchips are one of the top five export products in America. To make those chips, you have to have a lot of water.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's this export market controversy. It's that we're growing crops, using Arizona water to grow crops to ship overseas. We live in a global economy, and being able to export products is usually commendable in most industries. Arizona agriculture has been shipping out, exporting products for as long as I've been here, for basically all of the 20th century. And We do that in the United States as well. So people don't holler about that. They want to champion it, particularly here in places like Arizona with growth that's taking place. We see industrial growth, commercial growth, and that's championed in many sectors. And all of a sudden you stop and think about, wait, they're using our water to grow crops that are being exported, sold on an export market. Yeah, that's where the markets are. That's the way this economy works today. We'd be delighted to have that if we're selling out these chips, as you say, or automobiles or lawn chairs or whatever it might be that we can export.
Well, it's rarely brought up about the microchips. And, you know, it gets to the point where you think about, is agriculture an abuse of power? I mean, some are even saying that in some of this so-called investigative reporting.
Right, right. Well, yeah, that's, you know, I think there's some, like, a lot of hyperbole associated with a lot of this. Like I say, it comes back to the histrionics that are going on, kind of villainizing agriculture. But I think at the end of the day, we're going to have to come down and deal with the facts and be rational and reasonable about this. Really need to, because a big part of this to me is what we do today will infect generations yet to come. And when we're really reaching a point, I think, living in a place like Arizona in the desert, with limits to how many people we can support here.
Yes.
You know, there's not another discussion that goes on about, well, how, when we have almost 7.2 million people in the state right now. Populations are projected to be 10 million in this state by 2050.
How are we going to sustain it?
Exactly. I mean, well, I have an opinion. This is a little editorial here.
Uh-huh.
But we don't have the roads to support them today. You know, if anybody drives between here and Phoenix, we know that there's a choke point for 60 miles between Sacaton and Phoenix.
In the Indian Nation.
Yeah.
On the two-lane highway
on I-10, major thoroughfare.
Everything.
And we're building all these warehouses in Arizona to increase commerce. And yet we have these, we can't keep up with infrastructure. And, you know, we could talk about that one all day long, which I'm just a regular American citizen, an Arizonan living here. dealing with it. But, you know, there has to be a question of how many people can we support? And if you look ahead, do you want those people to have a capacity to grow food locally and regionally? If so, we need water for those farms.
Otherwise, where's the food going to come
Absolutely.
From?
Absolutely. Logical questions.
All right. Jeff Silvertooth sticks around for segment four coming up on the Buckmaster Show, the Winter Solstice Edition. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is collected throughout Pima County and averages more than $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, segment four, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Rain is coming into our area, but after the rain, it's going to be really nice over in Silver City, and great weather to get out and do some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, and just on kind of a different environment. A lot of Victorian architecture in Silver City, especially the downtown area, all dressed up for the holidays, bright lights, just something different. SouthwestNewMexico.org is their website, and they will tempt you on the website with great things to do. It's great places to stay, and if you like to eat New Mexican cuisine, where the question, Jeff Silvertooth, is always, do you prefer red or green?
Red. Red today.
Red chili.
Green tomorrow.
Red chili.
Yeah.
Maybe green tomorrow. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Tony Davis piece, How Quickly Farms. The headline is How Quickly Farms Are Draining Arizona's Groundwater. The groundwater supplies are declining. We know that in, Tony points out, five farming-dominated basins across Arizona. And to say the least, you're very familiar with the five basins he's talking about.
Right. Yes, sir.
Yeah. So what's your take?
Well, the first take is, you know, what he's saying is there's a strong basis of truth and fact of what Mr. Davis is putting forth in that article. And for example, you go right here, just take one of those cases, and it's close to us, the county next door to the east is Cochise County. And Cochise County has been is a good example of that. There's not any regulation on that. If you buy land, you own land, you can put in the wells and you can basically pump all you want, all that you're big enough to do. And it's basically what we've been living with is the remnants of the 19th century approach to Western development. It's kind of the Wild West, so to speak. So there's no regulation associated with that. And each of these basins that he describes are basically unregulated basins in that regard. The 1980 Groundwater Management Act, I don't remember if he really got into that in the article or not, but the 1980 Groundwater Management Act set up some active management areas. We call them AMAs. And that was basically the Yavapai County around Prescott, Phoenix area, Casa Grande and Tucson, you know, kind of the metro belt here in the state. And those have active, we have active management areas there where there's rules and laws about how we can deplete those water resources. And they're supposed to be adhered to. There's some loopholes in those laws. And that's another thing in itself. But the outside, the rest of the state is open to, you know, just general open acquisition of land and acquisition of water rights that go along with that. And so the governor, our Governor Hobbs right now, has a groundwater management council. And within that groundwater management council, there's a rural council. And that rural council is shouldering up some of the responsibilities of some of these basins in question. How do we best regulate them? They put forward some recommendations, I believe a week or 2 weeks ago, to the governor's office. And the recommendations are such that, you know, help. These are ideas, parameters by which we can possibly pass some legislation. It's highly controversial. There is, of course, there are people that really resist any kind of regulation, any kind of management. That's kind of part of the Arizona heritage, is to have that freedom to get out here and do whatever a person is big enough to do if they own the land. And the other school of thought is it's not sustainable what we're doing. And, you know, there are these disasters that are taking place right around us. I know of direct cases there in Cochise County where farmers and residents have been down there with wells, and their wells have disappeared because so many other people are coming in and punching in deep wells that are chasing deep water. They have the money, the capital to do it, and these local folks just don't.
Well, that water is not going to last forever, though.
No, it's finite.
I mean, it's disappearing.
What you have is you have overdrafts. You have your draft. You're taking out a lot faster than it's being replenished in most cases. And the hydrology down there is fairly complex, but it's pretty well mapped out by the Arizona Department of Water Resources and the U.S. Geological Survey.
And the nearest one to us is southeast of Tucson in Cochise County.
Yes, sir. In Sulphur Springs Valley, right.
Yeah, called Douglas Active Management Area. And one of the things that came out, one of the suggestions, or I don't know if it's no new crops could be planted on land that hasn't been farmed in 5 years.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that one in Douglas is an AMA that was the first one of Groundwater Management Act of 1980 opened provisions that any part of the state that wants to develop an active management area can do so. And Cochise County, the Douglas area specifically, voted that in just in the last election, I believe in 22. And what they're putting in as part of those clauses is to say that clause with respect to new land development. So what's been happening is you see the people looking around these other areas and saying, well, if this is going to happen to us, they're punching as many wells as they can right now. So the past year, it's just been a prolific effort on the part of some of these growers that are able to do so, particularly some of these newcomers, and they're putting in as many wells as they can. And what I'm hearing from the residents down there, it's kind of ironic. They say, well, we've known this has been open regulation, unregulated for all our lives. That's why we want to keep it. But there's been this kind of sense of common stewardship in the communities where no one wants to be the one to take it all. And so now there's some of them are complaining. I hear them say, gosh, I did wrong. I tried to save and conserve all these years, and what I've done is saved a water supply for someone else to come in and suck it all up. And so it's creating conflicts in these communities, and they really need to work them out and resolve them. We need this to be resolved in the state as well. It's just it's another complex set of issues.
Well, if it's been over 50 years since, well, more than 50, almost 55 years, shouldn't we almost take a strong look at this again, these management areas?
Right.
Update them. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a strong element of our state that really is advocating very strongly for that. I tend to agree. You know, the laws, the 1980 Groundwater Management Act was amazing piece of legislation in itself, and how it all got passed, and that it did get passed in Arizona. But then what we need to do now is
I don't think
that.
You could pass it in Arizona right now with the way polarization is with the legislature.
It'd
I
be
don't
hard.
Know.
It'd just be a, hard. Yeah, yeah. But we're going to have to deal with these other issues. So one of the questions I thought you might ask would be that, well, if these recommendations from these councils went to the governor, will they be implemented? Well, that has to be passed into law. Then you have to go to the legislature, or she will, and the people will have to, the legislators will have to work with the governor's office to try to come up with some understanding. That's going to be, well, they have the challenges ahead of them, all of them do, to try to work that out and negotiate it. It's been interesting watching this in just the past few months. You know, we've had resignations from agricultural representatives from those councils.
Who just say they don't want anything to do with it.
Well, they're saying that the deal is being railroaded and they're being forced to accept terms that they don't see as being appropriate, that their input's not being considered, and they resigned. And so there's been a loss of that kind of representation on those councils. That's been replaced with some good people that actually have skin in the game, that are actually farming and using that water, and they're making some contributions on those councils. So ag does have the representation, but it enters into our political arena, and it's another test of how well our systems can manage these types of controversies, these types of issues, but we have to deal with them, you know? Well,
what a crucial year 2024 will be. Do you agree with me on that?
Absolutely,
on this water?
In many ways.
It's got to be the big issue. We've got to face it.
Yeah, I will say there are people in the state that they're making an effort to do so. The ag community is very active in this, and I will have to say, you know, I've almost been, as you introduced me, in the state for 40 years, and major improvements have been made. Continual gradual improvements have been made in our efficiencies. We're using less water today, producing more crops. We say more crops per drop. We're using less land today. You look at population growth, and actually water use has gone down in the past 40 years. That's largely a function of agriculture, because of agriculture's use of water and improvements in efficiencies.
So you're saying agriculture is doing its part.
Agriculture has been doing its part. I can strongly attest to that. Yes, most people aren't looking at it, haven't looked at it, so they want to have a perception as opposed to the reality that they grasp, but that is the truth. And the people that are, they're good stewards. The people that are using this water recognize, we clearly recognize, nothing happens if you don't have water. You mess up on water, you can do everything else right with the crop, and you can ruin it, and you can blow it. And they're end up to make a living. And so they're good stewards of these resources. It just takes water to grow crops. And people will say, well, we need crops that take less water. Okay, well, you're going to have crops that produce less. You better hope that it's worth a lot when you harvest them.
Yeah.
Put them in a market.
Better hope you can get a lot of money for that, for those crops. All right, Jeff Silvertooth, my best to you and your family this holiday season. I hope we'll have a good year in 2024. Let's hope it's a better year, okay?
I sure do. I join you with that, Bill, and thank you.
Thank you very much.
Happy holidays.
Same to you, sir. All right, on behalf of Professor Silvertooth and Tom, engineering and producing the show, tomorrow Congressman Grijalva will be my Friday Focus interview. Be back in about 23 hours. Hope everybody has a good afternoon.